Thank you for downloading the Blue Moon podcast. Please give the show your support by becoming a backer. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Hello and Happy New Year to everybody listening to this very special Blue Moon podcast. If you've been a Patreon backer this season, then you might have heard some of our previous City Heaven, City Hell shows. Normally, we've got one City fan and one guest from the opposition, each picking a Heaven and a Hell match from between the two teams. But for this special festive season edition, we're going to do something slightly different. I'm David Mooney, I'm joined by Dan Burke.
Happy New Year, Blues.
Happy New Year. Bob Toole.
Hi Mooney, how you doing?
Not too bad, thanks. And Kieran Murray.
Season's greetings.
Good, you know, use of synonyms, everyone there. Nobody repeated themselves, so really well done. Today, we've all picked a Heaven and a Hell match that City played over the Christmas period from years gone by. We've defined the Christmas period as basically the last game that City played before Christmas, right up until the first game of the new year. So anything that's fallen in that bracket, we've picked our Heaven and Hell games from. Kieran, we are going to start with your Heaven choice. We're going back to the 21st of December 2013. It finished Fulham 2, City 4. The headlines from this game, Joe Hart came back in after seven Premier League games on the bench after he was dropped. He was dropped after him and Mateo Nastasic made an error at Chelsea right at the death. In this game, City went 2-0 up in the first half. Then Fulham pulled it back to 2-2 just after half-time. And then goals from Jesus Navas and James Milner won it. Here's the highlights. They're from the Premier League's own website, and it's their On This Day feature. So there's some very odd music on the background, which I can't get rid of. So enjoy the entire package.
Almost the entire stretch of the Barclays Premier League separates these two. Will they be separated on the pitch as Fulham in the bottom three face Manchester City, who have their eyes on the title? It's Yaya Toure. It's a bolt from the blue. All eyes were on Kolarov, but then that man stepped forward. Driven in towards Di Michaelis, and then stabbed in. It's a second for Manchester City. It's Vincent Kompany. Right place, right time. Tarab will give chase to this. Clichy slips. Tarab, Richardson is up with him, and that's it. Adel Tarab, Kieran Richardson, pulling back in it. The plot thickens at Craven Cottage. Intelligent run from Sasha Rita. Reese is in the middle, and that was it. And that's a miscue clearance, which has gone in. How did that happen from Vincent Kompany? David Silva. Navas, foot down on the gas. Plenty of pace about him. Brilliant. Now that is how to put your team back in front on a massive day at Craven Cottage. David Silva. Silva back to Negredo. Negredo has tried to pick out James Milner. Has done. That's a fantastic goal again from Manchester City. Negredo to Milner. Bang! These are games where champions are made. It's finished at Craven Cottage. Fulham 2, Manchester City 4.
There we have it. So Kieran, why this game? Why did you pick this one as your festive Heaven treat?
I just, lots of little parts of it really stuck out to me. See, normally because I'm Irish, obviously, I don't stick around for Christmas in England. So I hate home games around Christmas because I always have to miss them. So I love the feeling of being away from home, back in Ireland, watching on the laptop. And yeah, I just really remember this. Bizarrely, I think the most memorable thing about this match is the Kompany own goal, which is just absolutely hilarious. Really, like you couldn't have pulled that off if you'd meant to, you know, after 100 goals at it. So yeah, it was quite a unique game. To go 2-0 up, feel like you're cruising, to ship two goals in comical circumstances almost. And then still pull off the win. Yeah, just really good. I always loved the ball from Negredo into Milner for the fourth goal. I just that's one of my favorite assists of all time.
If you think João Cancelo has been pulling outside of the boot passes off recently, and everyone's been raving about it, Negredo with that one, honestly, it's better than anything that Cancelo's done so far.
Yeah, it was superb. You surely thought he was going to hit it with his right foot into the box, but outside of the left from the touchline in the right wing, swung inside that way. It evaded one defender, and then Milner was there for basically a tap in. Do you remember we did a review of like a typical City review of this season?
I remember that, yeah.
I was going to say it might have been with Bob, was it?
I think we all contributed. There was a few questions that we all answered, and then it was put together in one big edited assembled thing, and it was kind of like game of the season, goal of the season, and then we put in assist of the season as well. And all of us went for that Negredo one, but a prominent Manchester United fan on Twitter like somehow stumbled upon it and pulled us up on it and was like, what are you talking about, assist of the season? Really tried to rinse us about it, like,
and it's not a thing, but it should be for that. Yeah,
well, that's I think that was our point. It would have been a bit daft and normal things, but I mean, what a ball. Like, how can you not comment on it? It's just insanely good. And a rare Jesus Navas goal in that as well. I suppose
it's probably his last one for City, you know, given that it was near Christmas in his first season.
Very true, very true. Although it's horrible hearing that a former United player scored against us in that as well.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I forgot about him completely, and then, you know, thinking back to this game and watching the highlights again for this feature, brought back some memories of how it was doubly annoying when an ex-United player scored against us.
Yeah, Dan, I heard you chuckling when Kieran mentioned the own goal. For me, the best bit of that own goal is Navas's overhead kick on the line to try and keep it out.
Yeah, he did his best to keep out. Yeah, it was bloody amazing finish from company, that, because he scored in the game as well. Of course, his finish was sort of a bit of a toe poke, and he probably thought he was having a great day, didn't he? Until that happened. But yeah, it was a mad game. This, like, the Yaya Toure free kick was really good as well for the opening goal, because this was like that season where he just sort of started scoring free kicks from nowhere. I seem to remember he scored one against Hull earlier in the season. Yeah. And I don't even remember him stepping up to take one before that. And he had that weird kind of technique where he approached it from sort of a side-on angle, didn't he? Like, and just sort of ran up and kind of swerved it in. And this one went in off the crossbar, bounced down, and then bounced up into the roof of the net as well, which you don't see very often. But companies was definitely the best finish of the game, I think.
Yeah. Bob, where were you for this game? Do you remember it at all?
I do remember it, yeah. I was actually spending Christmas with my wife's family, and they are all Reds, so I do remember specifically when that own goal went in, the company own goal, just like sort of cowering in embarrassment, just as, like, you're throwing away a two-goal lead in that fashion. It's just like, yeah, it's just ridiculous, isn't it, really? So they were all loving it, but thankfully Navas and Milner sorted it out pretty swiftly for us. So it was all right in the end.
Yeah, Kieran, one final thing on this game. The headlines at the time were, it could quite easily have focused on Joe Hart, because he'd spent that little spell on the bench and he came back in for this game. But you know, everything that happened in it kind of overshadowed that, and it was just kind of it was probably for the best for him that it probably helped him with the rest of the season, that the focus wasn't on him after this game.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, your notes for this were that Hart had come back into the squad again, into the team again, but that was so far from my memory about it. There were so many other little subplots and little side things. So Joe Hart, I mean, he did concede two, the second one in particular, in mad fashion, but there were so many other mad elements to the game that he just slid down the pecking order a little bit. I'm sure he would have rather have kept a clean sheet than concede two mad goals, but he wasn't the main event or the main feature, so he managed to slot back in. That was probably a pretty good piece of management from Pellegrini, really, because Hart was in seriously bad form at the time, wasn't he? And he just kept making mistakes, and Pantelimon did a good job, but Hart, it just felt it was the right time to slot him back in. And I think his form only improved from there, didn't it, for the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, I don't remember a mistake he made after that for the rest of that season, and obviously went on to win the title, so must have done quite well. Let's move on to game number two for this show. Dan, we're going to your hell choice right now. It finished City 1, Everton 2 on the 20th of December 2010. It was a really, really, really cold winter that year, and quite a lot of games had been called off that weekend. It meant that it was a Monday night game. It meant that a win would see City top at Christmas for the first time since 1929, but they would have played two more games than United, who I think would drop to second. City were unbeaten in seven Premier League games going into this. Everton hadn't won in six, so there was obviously only one way it was going to go. This is the inevitable happening, as covered by ABC in Australia.
A starring performance from Tim Cahill denied Manchester City the chance to climb to the top of the English Premier League. Cahill scored his eighth goal of the season in the fourth minute.
Keep it alive. Cahill! He's done it again!
The Australian World Cup star then laid on a second for teammate Leighton Baines as Everton triumphed 2-1.
There we go. No English commentary this exists, and it turns out, Dan, that any coverage of Everton at this time from Australia just focused on Tim Cahill. So there we go.
Fair enough, really, yeah.
So, without being too obvious about this, why was this your hell choice?
Well, there's the phrase, isn't there, when hell freezes over. I think hell did freeze over that night. It was fucking freezing. I've never been so cold in my entire life, I don't think. I mean, I've been in some cold countries. I've been in some pretty cold temperatures, but having to stand in the Etihad Stadium for 90 minutes and experience that was outrageous. And I just remember my feet being like blocks of ice that I've never known before or since. And I was speaking to a guy called Ian Irving, who works for Premier League Productions, a while ago actually about this. I believe he's been on the podcast in the past. And he was saying that he was working pitch side at the game that night, and it was that cold that one of the cameras actually froze and had to be sort of taken out of service. Like, it was genuinely like, I honestly don't think we've ever played it in colder conditions than that. So there was that. There was the... like you say, the fact that we could have gone top at Christmas, which was once upon a time considered a big deal, wasn't it? I don't think it's considered as such a big deal anymore. It sort of went through a period where that actually was important and actually did mean that that team usually went on to win the league. But there's been a few occasions since then where that wasn't the case. So, but at the time, it felt massive for us. I mean, we'd been sort of working our way up post-takeover for the past previous years, and felt like we were getting somewhere, felt like we were building something. We'd started that season pretty well, had a pretty good team, and things were kind of coming together, and it was like, oh, is this the year we're going to challenge for the title or win a cup? And as it happened, we did win the FA Cup at the end of the season. But I remember, maybe I'm conflating the two things here, but I seem to remember going to the bus, going to the game on the bus, sorry, and reading while on the bus that Carlos Tevez had handed in a transfer request that day.
I thought that as well. And it's a little bit kind of flipped around because he had handed in a transfer request, but it had been a couple of weeks earlier. And on the day of this game, it was the story was that they'd had clear the air talks with Mancini and that Tevez was back. And everyone thought, oh, that's going to give us a boost for this game. And then it just didn't.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. But that was a bit of a worrying time, I guess, because he was our star man at the time. This was obviously pre-Sergio Aguero, and we were sort of hanging our hopes on him. And if he was sort of playing silly buggers, it was kind of like, well, is the project all going to fall apart because of this? And obviously coming up against Everton as well, there was a lot of bad blood with Everton at the time. We bought Jolly Lescott from them the previous season, and that had sparked a bit of a rivalry, really. And they really hated us and were a team who often got the better of us. I think they were definitely our bogey team at that time. And yeah, of course, Tim Cahill scores after 4 minutes of this game, and it's like that. It was deja vu. You know, we felt like we'd seen him do that many times, and doing his little shadow boxing thing with the corner flag. So, yeah, all together, you know, the weather, the results, the performance from City. I mean, I remember it being that cold actually, because this was like this was the peak of kind of snud season for the footballers before they got banned, and obviously Carlos Tevez always wore one, didn't he? And Yaya Toure as well. And Yaya Toure came over to kind of defend a throw-in near where I was sat in the second half. And he pulled his snud kind of over his ears and over his head. Like, imagine like an old lady's shawl. Like, it was like that, the way he was wearing it, because it was that cold. He just needed to like keep his ears warm. And you think, you know, a guy from the Ivory Coast, well, fair enough, he played in Ukraine, but I bet even he'd not, you know, been that cold before. So, I felt his pain in that moment. But if you Google Yaya Toure snud, there's actually a photo of him wearing that snud, and it's hilarious.
Yeah, I don't know, Bob. I can't think, like Dan says, I can't think of a time when I've been colder at the game. And if I'm being brutally honest, I somewhere from the back of my mind, I'm plucking the figure minus 12 degrees on this, and I don't know why, because that's clearly too cold for the UK.
Yeah,
I think you're right there, Mooney. I mean, that's pretty Baltic. Yeah. I mean, it's funny with this game. I have zero recollection of it happening because I think my mind sort of blocks out Tim Cahill Everton victories at City's Ground.
So from about 2004 to 2010.
Yeah, the last one I remember, I think, was about 2008, and he scored in the last minute with a header from a corner, I think. So, yeah, I'm not much use contributing to this particular game because I just literally can't remember it.
It's honestly, there's so little of it exists online. I think collectively City fans have tried to just wipe it from existence. Because like even the red cards, I found out latterly that both Victor Anichebe and Kolo Touré were sent off, Kieran. But like, I no memory of that happening whatsoever.
Yeah, all the cameras froze, that must be why.
Yeah, I was back in Ireland for this, and I remember because the snow was so bad, my flights. So I'd moved to Liverpool in September of 2010, and almost was stuck in like my halls of residence during the PGCE because the weather was so bad that weekend. We ended up having to get the last minute boat back to Dublin. Oh God, it was horrendous. And then I remember being delighted that I was back home. And then City was the only game that went ahead because of the snow that weekend, because it was Monday night, and I could watch it in the pub with the lads back home. And like, I remember just thinking from the fourth minute onwards, fuck, I wish this had been called up.
Yeah.
Please support the show by becoming a backer. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
We're going to carry on with the misery and turn to Bob's hell choice now. This one will resonate with a lot of fans, Bob, because it finished Sunderland 1, City 0 on the 1st of January 2012. The context is City were level on points at the top of the table with United on level. This was their game in hand as well. United had unexpectedly lost at Old Trafford to Blackburn on New Year's Eve. And then with 20 seconds of added time left, this happened.
And Martin O'Neill saying, get forward, we can nick it here. G. Sessegnon. For G! He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible! It ain't over till it's over!
Bob, there were 4 seconds left when the ball crossed the line. There wasn't even time for City to kick off again. It was literally the last kick of the game that won it for Sunderland. Can you give me any more context as to why that might be hell for you?
I mean, that commentary is just horrendous. I don't think I actually heard the commentary at the time because I just stormed out of the room as it was sort of crossing the line. So, yeah, that Christmas period, I was with my girlfriend's family, and I was watching it with my future brother-in-law, who, as I mentioned before, they're all Reds. So we just watched it, and it was a pretty dire game, I think. And following the day before where United had lost to Blackburn, I was obviously just giving it a little bit to them. I was a bit more sort of cocksure back then than I am now, these days I kind of hedge my bets a little bit and wait till we've played. But at the time I wasn't too much like that. So watch that game the following day, and just the two of us watched it, and we were both a bit hungover from the party the night before. It was really, really bad, wasn't it? I mean, I remember in the second half, City were just sort of had them pinned back, but we were just kind of like pretty useless. And I had the sense that we're never going to score it. Whereas who I was watching it with, future brother-in-law Andrew, he was just like, oh, it's inevitable, you are going to score. Just like two opposite views. Neither came true, obviously. And then, the goal being offside as well, like, was just even more infuriating. So, like, as I say, I just stormed out the room and didn't really see the goal happen. I was sort of saw it was going to happen and just started swearing the ass down, but then kind of had to remember where I was to moderate my behaviour somewhat.
Yeah,
it was pretty hideous.
Yeah, Dan, the thing with this goal as well is, like, you hear Martin Tyler in the commentary say that Martin O'Neill was shouting, "Get forward, we can win it." There was a moment where you thought, where clearly City thought they're going to bring the ball away and they're going to head for the corner flag, because I think it was Aguero and Dzeko that were the strikers on the pitch at that point. Aguero has a shot which gets blocked and basically gives Sunderland possession. And you see about three or four City players go, well, that's clearly that, and just let them break past them, because there's obviously no time for them to go down the other end and score. But they do. And like the natural thing is to think, well, they're going to head for the corner flag.
Yeah. I seem to remember it was a pretty abject performance from City that day, which was annoying. Yeah, and to let it slip in the last minute like that was awful. We had a few moments in that season, didn't we, where it sort of looked like we'd kind of shot ourselves in the foot and came back from it. And this was one of them, thankfully. But yeah, I remember going out on New Year's Eve the night before with a few United supporting mates, and they'd lost to Blackburn, and I was taking the piss a bit as well, saying, "Oh, I'm off to Blackburn after this. Feel free to join me." I thought that was hilarious at the time. And obviously that came back to bite me on the arse the next day. And I was hungover as hell for this game as well. I think I was sort of periodically going to the bathroom and throwing up during the game. So that just made everything wonderful when they scored in the last minute. And yeah, if anyone out there is a VAR hater at this point, I would show them this goal and say, this is what it used to be like, you know, when before VAR, because he was fucking miles offside, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. It should never have stood. Kieran, did you at any point when... In the hours that followed this game, knowing that City was still top of the table because they had the better goal difference over United, they were level on points, they'd just missed the chance to go 3 points ahead. So did you take any consolation in going, well, it's still, we've maybe not got the advantage that we could have had, but we still have the advantage just?
Yeah, maybe. It felt like we'd just thrown it down the drain, really, though.
You liar. It didn't feel like that at all. It felt horrific, and you know it.
That's what I mean. I think, did we draw 0-0 with West Brom? Hodgson's West Brom on Boxing Day as well? Because I was in the pub for that, and a United fan, when he'd heard that we'd drawn, just shouted my name. Just went, "Yes, Kieran," like that, across the pub. So, and then the Sunderland game, when we had a chance to go. I mean, that season, the sort of back and forward, and then, you know, later on when we started dropping points and throwing away victories like Swansea and stuff like that, there were just so many times where it was doomed and you just felt that United would have it. But because they'd lost the day before, and I was hung over to the balls as well. So it just, that felt really, really sickening. I think I had to go out for the hair of the dog after that. It was awful.
Wasn't this a period we went on a run of loads of 1-0 defeats at Sunderland?
This might have been the first one, because when I think the year before would have been the first one, 10-11, because that was when Micah Richards gave the penalty away in the last minute.
Yeah, open net miss from Tevez, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then... this year happened, and it was Xi in the last minutes. Then they lost again 1-0 over Christmas the year after, and then I think they lost 1-0 in Pellegrini's first season as well. And it just the bad things just continued at the Stadium of Light. Bob, how did your kind of festive period end over this series? Did it over this season? Did it get better before you went back home after your in-laws?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they didn't have too much to shout about because, like you say, we were still ahead of them, and so yeah, it was all good, really. But yeah, I guess a few hours. I mean, it took me a little while to get over the game itself and the sort of burning sense of injustice about the goal, obviously being offside. But I was thinking about it before when I was just watching it back before, and there's a thought, well, if VAR existed at the time, then as well, it obviously would have been ruled out. But then, sort of the chain of events, like the Aguero goal would never have happened at the end of the season. So it's like, I'm kind of glad it did happen how it happened in a way. Yeah. So it worked out all right, didn't it? Sort of a few days afterwards and obviously at the end of the season.
Yeah, I didn't think for this New Year special we were going to get into the laws of causality and time and space, but here we are. It's
flat effect.
Yeah, you never know. You never know what's going to happen when we start one of these. Here, right? Let's move on to the next game. It's my heaven choice. I've gone for City 5, Hull 1 on the 26th of December 2008. For the first time ever, City had been in the Premier League relegation zone at Christmas, so this was the day after, this was the Boxing Day game. They'd been taken over the previous September and had signed Rubinho on deadline day, but then they'd had one win in the last nine Premier League games going into this and had lost three of the last four, so they were in awful form. The previous game was an awful 2-1 loss at West Brom, who were bottom. This is what Phil Brown, the Hull manager at the time, had to say after the game. Don't forget, at half-time, when City were 4-0 up, he brought his players out of the dressing room and did the half-time team talk in front of the away end on the pitch. This is what he had to say.
I thought it was a good team to catch Man City, to tell you the truth, and that wasn't the kind of mentality that we instilled into the players. It's going to be a tough game, but bottom line is we knew there was a little bit of turmoil going on in the camp, and if we could get a good start against them, then who knows? We had a couple of opportunities before they scored. We didn't put the ball away. Consequently, when they got the goal, they got their tails up, and they're a good side. But to come in 4-0 down at half-time was just not acceptable. And so it just wasn't good enough.
You kept the players out on the field for a little while at half-time. What was the message you were trying to get across there?
That you've got 4,000 travelling fans who probably made arrangements about their Christmas day to get to a game at Manchester on Boxing Day. And again, the performance wasn't good enough. You could say it's uncharacteristic. Probably on a handful of occasions in the last 2 years since I've been in charge that I could say that performances have been like that, but the quality of the opposition was probably better today. But again, it's one of them where you get your noses in front in games in the Premier League, and you go on to win games if you've got quality players. But our mentality wasn't right today, and you know, Man City, give them the credit, they played some good stuff in the first half, but we weren't at the races individually, collectively, and collectively is what it's all about. As a team, you've got to have the spirit to, even at a goal down, you've got to have the spirit and the mentality to get back into the game. And we didn't show any of that today.
So that was Phil Brown speaking to Sky Sports. Bob, when you saw that he was marching the players out of the dressing room and towards the away end, do you remember what your reaction was?
Well, I don't think I saw it live because I think in the context of the season, we were being terrible before the game. I think we hadn't won in about eight games or something. So I just was sort of resigned to not watching them. So I think I spent the day in the pub. But then when I saw the result come through, obviously I was like really excited. And then obviously it was quite sort of big news that he'd done that. And it was just unbelievable, really, wasn't it? It was hilarious. Like, I mean, just so humiliating for the players, like, and just sort of just to be laughed at by about 40,000 people or whatever it would have been. It's just incredible. But it always stings me, actually. Was it the following season where they beat us and Bullard did that celebration? They'd sort of taken the mick out of him. That kind of annoyed me a little bit. But yeah, it doesn't take away from the humour of the original thing, I guess.
Yeah, Kieran. You'd have been in Ireland for this one, I guess.
Yeah.
It's before. I think it's before you moved over, is it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So it was all my games back then were. I mean, obviously, it was before streaming on your laptop. It was before I even had a laptop. So it was following on teletext, and that was all I could do. That was basically apart from when we were on telly, which was very rare in these days. All I could do was the old CFAX 302, get the football up and see what was going on.
See, you wouldn't have had any of this. You wouldn't have known any of this going on around it.
But I remember the teletext thing focusing on Phil Brown. It was so odd. Like, you've got us scoring five, which was a rarity. And then the focus was that Phil Brown did this weird team talk. It's a bit like the Joe Hart thing that you referenced earlier on. You know, there were so many subplots that it kind of like, his went down the pecking order. The fact that we won 5-1 seems to have slid down a little bit because we were in the bottom three at the start of the day. And then Phil Brown did that. So you sort of forget about the match.
Yeah. Dan, this is, I do think it's a shame that happened in this game because it's partly the turning point for that season. City started the day in the bottom three. They finished in the top half of the table. They were I think eighth or ninth by the end of the season. They were lower than they'd been under Sven the previous season.
I think it was 10th, actually.
Was it 10th?
That season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they got up into the top half anyway. This game was a little bit of a catalyst, I thought, for Stephen Ireland to start scoring more goals because he started to score a few in the months before. But do you remember Felipe Caicedo?
Oh, yeah, Big Phil.
Yeah, suddenly came in. Yeah. He came in at West Brom and scored with a back heel half volley off the post. And then he got two in this game, and that kind of kicked him on for this half of the season at City.
Yeah, do you remember his goal against Racing Santander in the UEFA Cup or Europa League or whatever it was?
No, what was that?
We lost 2-1 and somehow went through on like head to head or something in the group. It was the year we this season when we played Hamburg in the quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. It was like the final game of the group, and I don't know if it's on YouTube or anything, but he just scored the most unbelievable like back heel goal in that game that nobody remembers. It's like the greatest forgotten City goal. It up on YouTube if it's there. It might not even be there. Maybe I've just imagined it. But yeah, he was a bit of a rare bear, him, wasn't he? We sort of like, I can't remember where we got him from or who signed him or anything. I just remember him sort of turning up and being around and suddenly like scoring a couple of goals every now and again and looking kind of half decent at times and pretty rubbish at others. And yeah. I think he's still knocking about. I think he's playing for Lazio now or something. Yeah.
Yeah, he's not a bad career.
Yeah, he's all right. Yeah, but yeah, Stephen Ireland, that's true. Because I mean, that West Brom game you mentioned earlier, we were absolutely awful that day. I remember losing at the Hawthorns. I remember watching that at my granddad's and coming home in the car with my dad saying, "We're going down this season." And it was a bit like sort of position Newcastle find them in now. It's like the richest club in the world could be playing in the Championship next season. Is that where we are? We've got Rubinho. We need to sort of show flashes of brilliance, but not done a great deal. And Stephen Ireland had come back that summer. Having done pretty well under Sven the previous year, and you know we had a few decent players, and he was one of them who was sort of coming to the fore. Come back, shaved his head, beefed up, and looked pretty good in patches. But yeah, I agree. This game was the real catalyst for him. He scored a really good goal and just ran the show. Really, he was just unstoppable that day. Really, and I think that gave him a lot of confidence in his ability, and we sort of kicked on from there and didn't have too bad a season in the end. But yeah, it was a proper Jekyll and Hyde season that, because the first half we really looked shocking.
Yeah, was there at any point after this game, Bob, that you felt that Mark Hughes deserved some time in the job? Because his first kind of few months, fans were not on board with his appointment anyway. You know, the United connections, the fact that he was seen as somebody who would do a job on a budget sort of thing. That's not where City wanted to be. But then the second half of the season was starting to pick up, and this game kind of started that. So, I mean, where were you on the whole Mark Hughes thing?
I'm ashamed to say I was a supporter of him, really, right until the end.
I liked Mark Hughes as well.
Yeah, I'm fine with him, yeah.
I remember being outraged when he got sacked. So obviously that was a long time after this game. Well, so it was about a year later, wasn't it? I had absolute faith in him in this season. I think he always used to say, and he said it a lot after he was sacked as well, like it was always really difficult, the circumstances that he inherited, which is kind of ridiculous when you become like the richest club in the world. It's not really a bad thing, is it? But yeah. He always used to lament that, which like at the time I kind of understood, because it was just a chaotic club that was so rich it didn't really know what to do with itself. And there was still a lot of crap players there. So he was probably about at our level at that time. So, I was totally up for him at that time. And he did have it in him to play some exciting football. I mean, was it this season when we beat Arsenal 3-0
as well? Yeah, that was the one win in the 9 games previous.
Oh, was it? I mean, that's one of my favourite games from that kind of era as well. I had real belief as well that Rubinho was like genuinely world class, and then like all my uni mates that were like United and Chelsea fans, they were just like, "No, he's not. What are you on about?" But yeah, it kind of looks a bit daft me sort of insisting that looking back now. But yeah, on both counts with Hughes and Rubinho.
Get involved with the debate on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
Right, well, let's take a look now at Dan's second choice. It's your heaven choice, Dan. It finished City 3, Aston Villa 1 on the 26th of December, Boxing Day 2002. City were newly promoted in the Premier League. They'd had a bit of an up and down season, though. They'd only won 2 of the last 6 games, but they were in 12th. They were the very definition of mid-table, given that they were 8 points off the bottom 3 and also 8 points off the top 6 as well. They'd lost their last game at home to Spurs 3-2, despite dominating. Here is the match report that aired on the match of the day equivalent ITV's The Premiership that season.
Kevin Keegan's made it clear no one's safe in Manchester City's side. This was the required response. Marc Vivien Foe set the team on their way. But like the match against Spurs on Monday, they failed to press home the advantage. Peter Enkelman preventing Sean Gota from stretching the lead, and Aston Villa started to stretch their legs. Venturing forward more and more, Ulysses De La Cruz pulled a save of sorts from Schmeichel. The signs were ominous. Dion Dublin had the final touch on that chance, more of a ricochet really. The opportunity he was presented with by J. Lloyd Samuel was far easier. 1-1, only Villa's third away goal all season, the side still seeking its first Premiership victory on the road. But City simply couldn't allow another match to slip away, and the arrival of sub Ali Benabia proved an inspiration. The Algerian desperately unlucky not to notch one up from distance. His solution was to get him much, much closer. Nicolas Anelka constructed City's second, delaying and delaying for the midfielder's run through the centre, then providing the perfect cross. On his best form, Benabia is a magician. You'll be hard-pushed to see a better pass all season than the one which released Foe for a third. His fifth in four matches. If only the team could be that consistent.
I must say, before we get into the details of this game, Dan, that is an absolutely textbook ending to one of those reports, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. ITV's the Premiership. That takes me back. Yeah,
that game. You think of where City were in that kind of first Premier League season. Expectations were not what they are now. So why did you pick this one?
The main reason is that I really love festive football. I love this time of year when there's loads of games coming thick and fast. I know it's not great for the players, and I'm all for kind of safeguarding the players and giving them rest. And I do think that English football needs a winter break of some form, but don't take our festive football away, because I really do love it. And the fact that there's so many games in quick succession over the festive period, you know, there's usually a game on the 26th, then the 28th, then the 31st or the 1st or whatever, they sometimes kind of blend into one, and I'm not sure, was that game on Boxing Day or was it a different day? Like that whole one that we talked about previously, I didn't even know that was on Boxing Day until we did this show. I can't even remember it as that.
Yeah.
But this game against Aston Villa, I remember it uniquely being Boxing Day. I remember sort of having a nice Christmas that year, going to Main Road. It was the last season at Main Road. I love that season. I love that era in City's history. I love that those first couple of seasons under Kevin Keegan. It was a really exciting time to be a City fan when we had a decent team for the first time in our lives, and it was really enjoyable, and we're playing some lovely football. And you know, I remember Ali Benabia having a stormer in this game. I don't remember, or I didn't remember until I listened to that commentary there, him coming off the bench in the game. I would have assumed that he'd started, but when you think about it, he had kind of dipped in his second season a little bit. He was a bit too old for the sort of demands of the Premier League, really, and wasn't really hitting the heights that he had the previous year, but when he turned it on, he could really turn it on, and he had a great game when he came off the bench here.
Diving header as well.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. I remember watching that from the north stand at the other end of the ground. It just looking brilliant, yeah. And Marc Vivien Foe scoring two pretty weird goals. Like the first one with his left foot, sort of looks like he kind of had no right to put it in the bottom corner from there. It's like, I don't know how he did that, really. And then the second one was that kind of slaloming run where he finishes with like the outside of his foot from like a weird angle. It's like while sliding on the floor.
He's like 90 degrees to the goal, isn't
exactly,
he?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah,
he's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just use your left foot, Mark. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was a very messy, sort of gangly footballer, wasn't he, Foe? I mean, he was one who, when he was sort of on his game, he was very hard to stop, but a lot of the time he was kind of off his game. And this was one of those days where he was on it, and it was really good. But yeah, I just remember this being a great sort of Christmas game. It's just the one that my mind always goes to when we talk about Christmas football.
Yeah, Bob, when you think about this kind of era of City, I mean, obviously Marc Vivien Foe is a big part of City's history, and he scored the final goal at Main Road, final City goal at Main Road, and all that sort of stuff. It is like Dan says, it's a team that has a special place in your heart, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the promotion season, the season before, was amazing. It was so exciting football. We scored loads of goals. And then when we came up, players like Benabia, obviously, which Dan's talked about, in my mind's eye, they're just incredible to watch. So it's kind of like the sort of pre-David Silva kind of equivalent, I guess, of that time for City and sort of our budget then. And then signing players like Anelka, and Foe, I absolutely loved, and obviously he's sort of grown in your affection, obviously, with what happened to him. And I believe we were going to actually sign him permanently before he passed away. So yeah, I mean, it is a real special time that I look back on, and watching the highlights before as well, it was just really nice to see Main Road, because quite often just the highlights I watch these days, it's more modern times, so just to see Main Road, it like brings a lot of memories back.
Yeah, Kieran, obviously, as we were all kids at when this game was going on, like kind of early teenagers, late teenagers, between those sorts of ages. So I mean, did you ever get to see Main Road?
No. One of my absolutely biggest regrets, I think I've spoken to you about it before on the show on the Patreon. I totally agree with Bob. I love seeing the highlights of Main Road. I wish I'd been there. It just looked always so atmospheric. I'm not sure it was a cauldron necessarily. Maybe you guys can tell me that, but just so close to the pitch. The acoustics, even, you know, when the goals go in, I think it always feels like there were, you know, limbs all over the show kind of thing. And yeah, watching the highlights of this was amazing. It just, I love watching old highlights of Villa, because we just seem to have such a good record against Villa as well. So yeah, that was really nice. But not being able to see the likes of Benarbi alive, it makes me dead jealous and really annoyed that I was kind of watching this from afar. I had the kit that we were playing in at this time, you know, that proper dead, deep, dark, laser blue kind of vibe. It was dead baggy, and I loved it. I think I was wearing that kit when I got my GCSE result, or that shirt when I got my GCSE results, bizarrely. we went on the beer on a beach, and I was wearing that.
But did it have First Advice on the front, or IDOS? That's the big question on everyone's lips.
I think I had the First Advice. Yeah.
So that would be the Premier League kit then, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What was Main Road like? What are the key fundamental differences between now and then?
It was just an old-fashioned, creaking shithole of a ground, but it was our shithole, and it was beautiful, and it was wonderful, and it was everything, and it smelt incredible. It smelt like horse shit, but it smelt incredible because it was Main Road, and it was just it was just everything about going to football as a young kid that I sort of hold dear, really, and everything that kind of I'll always have beautiful memories of that place, and in a way that I kind of do have good memories of the Etihad. You know, obviously we've had some good times on the football pitch there, but the ground itself just doesn't feel like home to me still, really. It doesn't feel the same.
Yeah, it's definitely not the same. Let's bring the mood down a little bit, because Kieran, we're going to your hell choice now. We're going to the 27th of December 2019. It finished Wolves 3, City 2. City were third going into this game, 14 points off Liverpool at the top of the table, and this gave Liverpool a game in hand over City as well. It also kept Leicester in second in the table, a point ahead of City, but now on level games. Here is the action from the match.
Is Edison? Didn't get there. That could well be a red card. Denial of an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. This kind of area, City can be so dangerous, whether they have 10 or 11 on the field. Trying to find a way through. Have they won a penalty? No. I'm sure that the VAR will be having a long look at that. Martin Atkinson still in conversation with David Coote. If he makes the television screen signal, it is a penalty. It's Raheem Sterling. Up against Rui Patricio, save! Well, I think what they have to check is whether Cody was encroaching, and it is going to be retaken. Sterling against Patricio again, same result, but he puts the rebound in, and Manchester City, a man down, are a goal up. Rodri De Bruyne, now Raheem Sterling is away. He's got a lot of ground to cover. He has covered it superbly. It's Traoré, and it's Wolves back in the game. The hero of the Etihad on the score sheet to give Wolves fresh hope. Mendy with time to take a touch. Oh, he's lost possession. Traoré, Jimenez, 2-2, and so preventable for Manchester City. All the hard work undone. Doherty taking it on, adjusting his feet, and scoring for Wolves. 2-0 down against the champions. Have they gone and won it?
So, Kieran, how on earth do you lose a game when you're 2-0 up? You've got 10 men, I know, I understand, but you're 2-0 up, you're away from home. Why do they make so many silly mistakes?
I have no idea, David. that's so hard to listen back to. Speaking of like games with big subplots and lots of talking points, it was like that. The Ederson, I'm still not convinced Ederson, like, I mean, he sort of had to go, but when you look at it, the contact was minimal.
Yeah.
It looked really bad.
Well, I'm gonna come in here and do my usual stick a hat on and go. Speaking as a goalkeeper, like Ederson had nowhere to go. He came for the ball. He realised he wasn't going to get there, and he stood still. And I can't remember who it was that ran past him, but basically they ran into him.
Yeah.
And like at that point, there's the foul is because Ederson has made a bad decision and come off his line, where actually. Like he wasn't trying to stop a goal scoring chance. He was just stood there, and the forward runs into him. He could quite easily get round him if he wanted to, and get round him, get the ball, and pop it into the empty net. But he didn't want to. He wanted the red card.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if you look at the substitution, Sergio Aguero going off for Claudio Bravo on the 12th minute. I mean, you're not going to hold out much hope for that game going well, are you? But then to get 2-0 up. It seemed really, really crazy to throw that away. Molyneux was a cauldron that night. You could even hear in the highlight reel there. It was a really, really, really tense, terse, taut atmosphere. And they were so wound up about the VAR things, about the penalty incident. They thought the momentum was kind of in their favour when we lost Ederson so early. And then Sterling was having one of those games where, you know, the crowd were really on his back, and they were really properly like pissed off with him. I think he celebrated the penalty that eventually went in, like right in front of their fans. And it was just one of those where it did end up being a real hell. Like this is this game again, Traore. Like we've just played Wolves last weekend, was it? And
it's New Year's Day. It's a few weekends ago.
Yeah, sorry.
we haven't recorded this early.
Yeah, back in early December. So, but even like I thought, because Gaz and I were stood saying that I thought that City's defence looked frightened, looked terrified of Traore even now. This game would kind of strike fear into the heart of anybody. I thought Mendy was shite for their second, but I actually did think he fouled him. He's just a big fucker, isn't he? And managed to he just out wrestled and out muscled City all the time. We were terrified of him, but I mean the defenders we had, was this the Fernandinho in defence season?
It was.
And it just, you know, hearing those stats that you said about how far Liverpool were ahead with the game in hand and everything, it's just, I hate that season so much. I even hate looking back at the purple sleeves on our kits and stuff. It's just like everything about that. But VAR coming in and the amount of like, because VAR at the moment, touchwood, is working okay. And like, you know, the decisions that are being made are normally sensible and fairly quick this season nowadays in the modern kind of iteration of it. But back then it was just like Liverpool seemed to get the rub of the green all the time. And it was just a pain in the arse. The football wasn't fun. I was in a pub dressed as a monk during this, I've mentioned before in the show. So I was sat watching this on my phone because it was on Amazon Prime. The first game was on Prime, so you could watch it on your like app on your phone, fairly handy. And I was going to a fancy dress party that night around Christmas, dressed as a monk. And it was a 1920s theme, so everybody else was dressed up as like Gatsby or a flapper or like, you know, the sort of Peaky Blinders vibe.
Yeah.
And I was just dressed as a monk in the pub for the crack. So it just added insult to injury to be dressed like that, having thrown away a 2-goal lead.
Yeah,
were there a lot of monks in the 1920s? Was that a particularly prevalent time for monks?
Very much so. Every fancy dress party I've ever gone to, Dan, I've dressed up as a monk, no matter what the theme is. to the point where on the night, in question, the kind of like MC who was running it, like directed everybody's attention in the whole kind of like big ballroom that we're in to me dressing up as a monk again. Like, it's a known thing in my locality that I dress up as a monk.
Do you shave your head as well?
No, I've got a little wig. I've got a little wig with a baldy bit in the middle of it. Like, amazing. No, big fan of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Kieran was saying there that Liverpool were so far ahead. Bob, I'm guessing that even before kickoff in this game, you'd given up any hopes of City mounting a title challenge. There's almost that element of still being annoyed that they're throwing away this title, given like even though it's 14 points after the game, you still have this element of, well, they could put a run together. Were you ever in doubt that, or did you ever feel like City might get a run together that season if they'd won that game? Maybe.
Not really. No. I mean, I think there was some shocking results even before this, like the Norwich one, like Fernandinho at the back and Otamendi. It was just a lot of bad signs, and I think at that point I was kind of resigned to it being over. I mean, 14 points is ridiculous, isn't it, really, at that stage of the season?
And
they were so relentless. I think if anything, I was just hoping for complete and utter collapse from Liverpool. With a lot of these games we've talked about tonight, I've sort of done my due diligence and sort of watched highlights and stuff, but I just refuse to do it for this game. It's just still it still annoys me for all the reasons Kieran's already outlined there.
You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
Well, we're coming towards the end of the show now, so we're going to go into a proper run of games now, because it's my hell choice, and I've cheated a little bit on this. I've picked two games as they were back-to-back, and I was also thinking, fuck it, it's my podcast, I'll do what I want. the first one I've gone with is City 2, Crystal Palace 3 on the 22nd of December 2018. Going into this game, City were 4 points behind the leaders Liverpool, but they had a game in hand. The table was basically Liverpool top, played 18 with 48 points. City in second, played 17, 44 points. Then this happened.
Sane for Delph. Got the one. 1-0. Schlupp. Trying to work the angle onto his left foot, and it's a brilliant finish. Jeff Schlupp for Crystal Palace. And they're back on level terms with their first shot of the day.
It was an important defensive header. Bernardo Silva winning the second ball, and Townsend!
An unbelievable strike. Crystal Palace lead at Manchester City, but not just that, they do it with one of the goals of the season. Then Myers challenged by Walker, and it's a penalty. Doesn't save this one, and Crystal Palace are 3-1 up.
De Bruyne's ball in, a better ball. Oh, it's a much better ball, whether he intended it or not.
Now that finished 3-2. And then the very next game on Boxing Day 2018, it was 4 days later, City went to Leicester. Here's what happened in that game.
Aguero, Bernardo Silva, flag has stayed down. Manchester City go in front. It's taken them less than 15 minutes. Vardy on the move. And Jamie Vardy had kept a good line and stayed onside. Albrighton, Leicester level. Albrighton with a corner kick. Ricardo! Oh, magnificent! What a goal by Ricardo! It's a red card. Manchester City's afternoon goes from bad to worse.
So in the space of two games, City had gone from 4 points off the top with a game in hand to 7 points off the top on level games. After that game, it was Liverpool top, played 19, 51 points. Tottenham in second, played 19, 45. And then City had slipped to third, played 19, 44. Bob, I'm going to bring you in on this one because you're from round near Leicester. So Boxing Day, the defeat to Leicester, was that, I mean, I can imagine you can be quite an angry man anyway, but I imagine you were you were fucking fuming after this one, were you?
I didn't watch the game. I was out for a walk with family at the time, but I was following it on my phone because obviously following the Palace game, I was sort of quite anxious to get back to winning ways. And I remember thinking before the Leicester game that, you know, if it's quite rare for City to lose consecutive games under Pep. So I thought, well, you know, it's the sort of law of averages. We're going to you know, get a result here. So when I saw we'd taken the lead dead early, I was really like happy for the rest of the walk and didn't check my phone. And then when I got home, I just sort of sat there stewing, like just absolutely fuming. It wasn't very nice. Yeah, to lose the Bob Tool Derby, as we know it as locally, yeah. Yeah, not a good one.
Yeah, Dan, the fact that it had come after that game where Townsend had done that thing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I moved away from the UK in 2017 and have probably been to about 10 home games since then. I have a pretty poor record, to be quite honest with you. And I've seen us lose twice at home to Crystal Palace, the most recent being this season, and this there was this one as well. I think remember coming back for Christmas, being really excited about going to a game for possibly the first time that season. And yeah, it was pretty shocking. In fact, I remember us, we made a pretty sort of slow start to the game, and then Gundogan put us ahead with that header. I remember turning to my mum, who I was sitting with, and saying, oh yeah, I was worried it was going to be one of those days for a while there, but we've got our nose in front now, it's all going to be okay. And then Andros Townsend pops that one in, and then Kyle Walker makes that. I mean, that was an amazing goal, by the way. You're probably one of the best goals I've seen live, to be fair. But it didn't feel particularly good at the time, and then Kyle Walker made that stupid mistake for the penalty, and yeah, it was really poor. And then combined with the Leicester game, it was looking pretty bleak for us at that time. We had a lot of fear about Liverpool winning the league at the time. It felt like it was going to be the end of the world if they won the league, didn't it? And we staved them off right until the final day that season. Thankfully, the other game that I went to over that festive period at the Etihad was us beating Liverpool 2-1 at home, which was, of course, the huge turning point in the season. But yeah, things were looking pretty bleak over that Christmas period.
Yeah. Just one question for Kieran before we move on to that final game, because obviously you'd have been in Ireland at the time and kind of enjoying, in inverted commas, Christmas with your family while City were losing games like this. I remember I'd gone to my partner's parents for Christmas for the first time in this year. And so I'd stayed over and we're going to go to my parents to watch this game on Boxing Day. And I remember saying in the morning of the game as I was setting off to drive, I've got a really bad feeling about this game. There's something doesn't feel right at the moment. And if they lose today, it's really properly going to ruin Christmas. And you know what, Kieran? It did.
Yeah. No, I know it did. City have a way, don't they, sometimes of fucking things up for you around Christmas, like. I kind of agreed with what Bob was saying there. The consecutive defeats were such a rarity. You just felt like there was no way it could really happen again. And when we got our noses in front through Bernardo in the Leicester game, you just thought, like, this will be it now. We'll be okay. It was that 18-19, as much as it ended unbelievably well, there were a few patchy results kind of in and around this time. Did we slip up against Newcastle as well, or have I invented that?
That was late January, I think.
Yeah, late January.
Yeah, and there were just too many times, and Liverpool looked really imperious. And you just thought there's too many defeats compared to the Centurion season, where we were like flawless for so much of it. There just seemed to be too many defeats to be... to be kind of thinking that we're in with a shout. But I mean, one of the best things ever experienced in the Premier League was, you know, what sort of came to pass next.
Yeah, well, let's move on to that, because Bob, your final choice, your heaven choice, is City 2, Liverpool 1 on the 3rd of January 2019. As we've said already, City went in 7 points behind Liverpool at the top of the table. Before that, City had lost 3 of the last 5 in the league. So this is what happened that afternoon.
And Mane's through the middle. Oh, it's hit the post. Mane goes again. Oh, and it's going to go into it. It isn't. It's squeezed away from Salah. Aguero's got in front there. Oh, he's found the goal to keep this extraordinary run going. It's a lovely ball to the far post, and it's led to the equaliser. Knocked in by Roberto Firmino. And for Sane, chance. Goal for Manchester City.
So, Bob, it doesn't really need any explanation why this one is the your heaven choice, because you said it was the turning point for the season, and it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you asked about games to choose for this feature, it was just the obvious choice for me. I mean, it's probably the best game I've ever been to. I mean, it's not necessarily the best game I've ever seen football, but it's certainly the best one I've been to. And I mean, it's good of you to choose the two preceding games as your held, because it gives the context perfectly, because it was such a huge game in the context of the season. I mean, City had to win, otherwise I don't think they would have been able to catch Liverpool up. They would have gone 10 points clear. Even a draw wouldn't have really been enough, because you really needed to beat Liverpool. And I just remember the atmosphere that night was just electric. Just even walking like up to the ground outside and in the concourse, it was just brilliant. I've very rarely experienced that firsthand. And then the game itself, it was just two teams just giving it absolutely 100%. It was so high intense. And I think Pep was being quite cautious with the defence. I think Laporte played left back, didn't he? And Stones and company were the centre halves, which was not that common that season. I think he did it at Anfield away in that season. But he was obviously being really cautious about the their attackers, given what happened in the Champions League against Liverpool. And it was just mad. I mean, I think like the result as well, I think it stopped in the grand scheme of things, it stopped Liverpool being champions, obviously, but also stopped them being Centurions and Invincibles, because we're the only people to beat them
that season.
In that season. So yeah, I mean, there's so much to go at with that game, though. I mean, I'm sure you guys will be able to fill me in on stuff I've not said, because it was just unbelievable.
I was going to say, Kieran, the goal line clearance in the first instance, it was a problem entirely of John Stones's making, but boy, did he solve it quite well.
Yeah. I absolutely adore John Stones and everything he brings, and I've always loved him at City, but that will long stick in the memory after he's quit playing for us. It was just unbelievable. I remember getting the train back after that game and just watching the replays on Twitter, and then the goal line sort of Hawkeye. It was right on the line, wasn't it? Like 12 millimeters or something away from being a goal. There was something nuts about it, but the clearance, the defensive kind of like faux pas that were leading to it were awful, absolutely horrendous. You kind of like, you watch through your fingers now when you watch it back, but he really atoned for it, and it was just mad. It was just like, I think that summed up everything with Liverpool and City that season. Fine margins, like as Bob's kind of saying there, like we had to beat them to stop them in their tracks, because a draw wouldn't have been enough. And it literally came down to millimeters. It was just so, so tight. I would never want to go through that again. And it looks as if this season might be heading to a title race like that. But I like the thought of that as anxiety inducing already. But yeah, that game was absolutely wonderful, and the victory was just incredible. It was so good.
Yeah, and obviously, Dan, the opening goal for City that night, Sergio Aguero just blasting it in with his left foot at the near post. That's a fantastic goal that I think often gets overlooked in how many good goals Aguero scored.
Yeah, just peak Sergio Aguero, isn't it? The him at his absolute best, and for him to squeeze it past, you know, a goalkeeper who is a brilliant goalkeeper, but was in incredible form that season into that top left corner with his weaker foot was amazing. So it was the noise that was made when that goal went in just sort of lifted the roof on the stadium. I don't know if I've ever heard a noise like that at the Etihad before. Just a quick point on the John Stones goal line clearance. It always annoys me. We were talking about causality earlier in the show. It annoys me when people say that was the goal that won the title, because no, that was the goal that stopped Liverpool going 1-0 up in that game. Like there's no reason that we can't believe that City wouldn't have still won the game even if that goal had gone in. Do you know what I mean?
Causality, the butterfly effect, we're back there again.
Exactly.
Right, so that brings us to an end for this very special edition of City Heaven, City Hell. Thank you to my guests for today's show, Dan Burke.
Thank you very much.
Bob Toole.
Cheers, Blue.
And Kieran Murray.
Happy Blue Year.
Oh, goodness me, that was awful. I was just about to say if you've enjoyed this as well, and now that might have put people off, but here we are.
It's because at the start you said we all said something different, so I was like, I'm going to have to change it up a bit.
Fair enough. But if you have enjoyed this, and this is the sort of thing that you'd like to hear more of, then you can have a look at our Patreon page this season. You get the podcasts in your usual podcast app when you sign up, and they're released every Monday. Take a look at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast for more details. We'll be back next Friday with a regular edition of the show, so we'll see you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please support the show. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.